Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Elsie Seda in Southern California, and I have my co-host Margaret Sheldon on the line in Boston. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing, you know, I've had a morning. I started to tell Leslie before we went on the air. I took a shower. I put my pants on inside out. I want to know if anyone has ever done that. I only realized it when I saw
too much information, Margaret.
Oh, it got better. The dogs got out and chased two or three deer. There's always more lurking. Oh, and then I proceeded to spill a gallon of cold brew coffee all over myself, my tile floor. It's like, I can't get it right today.
I am so sorry.
I was able to save one cup of cold brew, so I should be good for the show. The ice you clinking is not, you hear, that's right, the ice you hear clinking is not a gin and tonic, it's my coffee. So, but I'm excited. Leslie, I know you had a tough weekend. You had to get through some family obligations and the service for your dad. I hope everybody's in a good place and you're feeling, I don't know what I hope you're feeling. I hope you're feeling at peace with all this.
Oh, you are so kind. You know, I have to say, so many people, I mentioned this last week on the show, so many people have been incredible about reaching out. And this is something, sadly, that most of us do go through in our lifetime. And
yeah.
It's been a range of emotions, but I am so thankful for my four brothers and sisters. And we kind of had the, it was a very emotional time because not only did my father pass away, but my mother has dementia. And so we've been dealing with that. And it's just not been a very fun month, I'll be totally honest. But I've learned so much and so thankful to have four other strong siblings that can kind of help us all get through this. So it's been pretty incredible. So thank you. I really appreciate that. And I think I'm kind of back in it. I was supposed to be in Texas this week, but that didn't happen. So I just had more family stuff going on here. So it's all good. But thank you. I so appreciate that. You're very kind,
well,
my friend.
Well, thanks. All right. Well,
so I do.
What?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you first.
I did also hear from a gazillion people after we did that Instagram show, Margaret, with all the tips that we wanted to recommend. And that was a couple of weeks ago. And it's so nice when people reach out and say, hey, I learned this and I learned that. Because sometimes, you know, this is the 8th year of this show, which is completely insane. But the fact that we just talk on the phone and we don't know if anyone ever listens, I'm kidding. It's so nice to get feedback. And to have people say, oh, my gosh, I did what you said and it actually worked. So that's been
and
super great.
And it works. That's right.
It
I
does.
Know. I sit in rooms now.
It
I
does.
Feel
social
like
media is just so weird. It's a necessary evil part of our lives, but we like it.
Yeah.
Well, we have a great guest on the show. So, Margaret, I'm going to let you do the introduction.
Great. I almost titled this show Another Conversation with Colin Page because, you know, one of the real joys of co-hosting AHA is that when there's an artist that I'm sort of interested in or curious about or whatever, I usually, if I write a good enough email, I can usually get them to respond. And after that, I just really, really try to charm them into saying yes to an interview. And Colin Page was one of those artists 5 years ago whose work I just loved. And I was seeing, you know, his face or his name at least pop up. And I thought, all right. So we had a terrific conversation in, I can't even believe I'm going to say, 2014. And just recently, because, you know, I sort of follow everyone we've talked to closely, and I saw that there were some pretty big changes, very exciting changes going on in Colin's life, and I thought, gee, we need to circle back and find out what's going on. So
awesome.
By way of introduction, I'll just give you a quick bio. Colin Page was raised in Baltimore, Maryland. I still can't get over that. You seem like such a New Englander to me. He studied painting at my alma mater, the Rhode Island School of Design, although he didn't stay long enough because he then went on to Cooper Union which, you know, for anyone who knows about the sort of East Coast art scene, Cooper Union is something that I didn't think real people actually got into. So kudos to our guest. Whether working on location or in the studio, Colin strives to capture the atmosphere and light of a scene. And my goodness, if you haven't seen his work, if you're not familiar with it, you should be Googling his name while you're listening to this show. Colin currently lives in Maine, where he focuses mostly on painting the landscape. And what I really love are scenes that show his life as a father of two young girls. Colin's work has been featured in solo exhibitions and group shows nationally and abroad. And I always see him in various group shots at plein air events, I must say. And we just want to sort of welcome Colin to the show today. And for anyone who's interested, you can search the blog archives. That's what you want to do. Blog Talk Radio Archive in 2014. That's where you'll find the initial interview. So, welcome, Colin Page.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be part of the show again.
Well, thank you for coming back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Colin, for those people who are listening who might be meeting you for the first time today, I'd love it if you could give us kind of a bit of insight into how you decided to become an artist.
So growing up, I always did a lot of drawing and just kind of, I was just always noodling around doing something, whether it was painting or drawing or making things out of clay. And my mother was very supportive and encouraged me and signed me up for art classes, from a very young age. As I got older, I think that when I really decided to do it more seriously, and kind of pursue it as a possible career was when I was in high school, and the first time I saw a Rhode Island school design recruiter come to the school to talk to kids about going to RISD. And at that point, I came home and told my mom, like, can you believe there are colleges where they teach people how to do art? And we thought it was the most absurd thing. And a friend
Margaret
of hers
could believe
mentioned
it.
That there was – I know. But that was the first time I really like started thinking about it. I have to, I'd always said I'm going to be an artist because I like drawing and painting, but that was when I realized like at a certain point I had to actually commit and take some real steps to go forward with it. And we found out there was an arts high school downtown in Baltimore, which is a really great school, a magnet school for the arts. So I went there from middle of sophomore year till graduation. And that was the first real step I kind of made a real commitment to go from just enjoying painting to trying to become the best possible painter I could be.
Yeah.
That's wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank heavens you became an artist. That's all I can say.
That's
yeah. Right. Yeah. It's funny, like those little things, like, I, you know, if it wasn't for us seeing my mom's friend that night, I might not have ever found out about the high school for the arts until I was too old to go. You know, there's just little things that end up saving the day and getting you into some great situations.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm thinking about how important those schools are. You know, I something that, you know, we all sort of find ourselves at these crossroads, and it's amazing how just being in the right place at the right time changes the course of your life, really. So let's talk a little bit about your paintings because, you know, I don't want to say it. I'm not a stalker. I'm an avid follower. And I can see that.
I'm happy. If you're stalking my paintings, I have no problem with that. That's great.
There you go. That's right. But your paintings have changed. I mean, I think that's only natural. Although I think the subject matter is pretty consistently, you know, if I were to try and describe you as a painter, I would say that you paint sort of things, objects, places, and a little bit of figurative work with the people in your life. And it seems like you paint mostly from direct observation. I'll ask you about photographs later. But what I'm wondering about is I see so many artists who get known for a particular style or subject matter. You know, people will say, oh, I just love, oh, Colin Page, he's the one that paints boats in the harbor, right? I mean, those beautiful harbor shots, and I just assume they're Rockport, Maine, because I think that's one of the prettiest little harbors, but I'm sure they're all over. My question is, like, how do you change it up without, or do you worry about sort of expectations? In other words, if you're known for one subject matter, do you, is it a risk to change it up?
I think the risk to me is getting known just for the one subject. I've always kind of liked to paint a variety of things. There are definitely people who think of me painting lobster boats or glare on the water, or, you know, there's certain things that are, I think, kind of trademarks. But I've always just wanted to know, like, anytime I see someone else paint some, like, a beautiful still life, I think, oh, I want to try to paint a still life like that, or a farmhouse, or whatever, you know, any whatever the random thing is. I've always wanted to learn how to paint as well as possible in as many different subjects as possible. So I feel like just my own curiosity is the main thing that keeps me looking around. I think one of the benefits to living in Maine is that we've got a very long winter, and there's I do paint outside once in a while in the winter, but, mostly I spend that time in the studio, and, you know, I know what you mentioned, we talk about photos later, but, you know, some of that time in the studio is painting from photos, from things I've collected over time. Sometimes I'll try to paint one of my daughters, or a lot of times I'll do still lives in the winter when I really want to paint bright, colorful scenes, but we don't have a whole lot of that going on in the winter. So, there's sort of like a nice seasonal forced change that keeps my subject matter evolving and changing over time too.
And you don't worry about the people who collect, or you don't worry about a gallery saying,
well,
your landscapes sell really well, that's what we want?
No, because if I all I did was paint the, like, I don't know what it would be. Like, say it's lobster boats. If all I did was paint lobster boats over and over again, I would just get bored, and my paintings would get kind of duller and less interesting. So I kind of feel like it's one of the things I think is tricky about painting for a living. Like, there's a huge benefit to painting for a living, and that I'm in my studio now to work for today. And, you know, it's ridiculous. I get to come out here and just paint all day, like pretty much every day. And it's a huge thrill to be able to do that. But I do have to watch out for letting that sort of commercial mindset get in the way, right? I can start thinking like, well, I've just got to paint a lobster boat, 'cause that's what people want to buy. Because if I start thinking that way, then I paint things that are not as visually interesting, like the motivation's wrong. And if I'm not painting something because I'm excited by some kind of a color harmony or some composition or design idea, like, there's got to be a visual appeal, or I feel like the boredom really comes out in the paintings. So,
I totally,
you know, when
agree.
I do
just
paint something because I feel like I got to paint it, I do pretty bad paintings. So I've always just kind of trusted that I have to paint what I'm most excited about, and some of them might sell better than others, but even the weirder stuff, like, I mean, I had a show probably 7 or 8 years ago where I was painting in Rockland Harbor around all this fishing, these lobster traps, and someone had just dumped a toilet out on the side in the middle of this, like, yard full of fishermen's junk. And I thought it was really funny. So I did a quick little 8x10 painting of this toilet sitting in the middle of this fish yard, and someone bought it. I don't know why. That was what I was doing mostly for my own benefit, because I thought it was just kind of a funny, like, you know, goof off. But I feel like
throw it up
paint
there,
anything,
give everybody a Somebody took that because they thought, boy, there's Maine for you.
Or they thought it was funny too, or whatever. You know, like, I kind of feel like the only way I can stay honest to myself as an artist while trying to make a living also selling these paintings is that if I am excited enough to paint it, eventually the right comes along.
That's interesting. I love the idea of just trusting it, or it'll get boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, Colin, you mentioned the weather in Maine, and I know you guys, you get a lot of snow up there, a lot more than we do here in Southern California.
Although you did get snow this year.
I know.
I saw.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm I'm curious about the weather challenges, but you know, if in looking through like your Instagram, I know I saw a couple snow paintings maybe like last January, but your paintings are so unbelievable. I mean, every time I go through, I'm like, oh wow, look at those still life. Oh wow, look at those boat paintings from China. Those are unbelievable. But do you like to paint outdoors when it's 20 degrees?
So
or
I don't do it as much as I used to. I do like painting in the snow. I think painting in the winter it can be really rewarding. Mm-hmm. One benefit is that up here the sun never gets that high in the winter, so you can be painting at noon. You've got these long shadows and beautiful light all day long, like consistently beautiful light. And especially when there's snow on everything, just the variety of whites, just the warm and cool shifts, and it can be subtle but really beautiful. I used to be more hardcore about plein air painting, and now I get more projects going in the studio. Like I have a bunch of big paintings I've been working on this winter, and it's just enough of a hassle to pack up all my plein air gear and get it all together and go out. And then it's become much more seasonal for me. I'm a fair weather painter.
You're human.
I think I did maybe two or three. Yeah. I did two or three this year where I'd go outside and paint. And it's, if it's the high 20s to low 30s and the sun's out and the wind is not blowing, it's not that bad. If the wind starts blowing, I have zero interest.
Oh, yeah.
It's really the wind makes it. I mean, even just like a 5-mile-an-hour wind when it's cold out makes it really, really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who are much tougher than me who are doing it all year round in some really awful conditions, and I admire them, but I'm not interested.
Good for you.
Yeah, we've talked to a few of those.
Yeah.
We have one guy,
Tad Retz, who paints like a snow scene a day. I don't know how he does it. It's crazy.
He could be in his car.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. That's true.
There are two. Our next question is sort of about, the evolution of life. I think it really struck me that we hadn't spoken to you in 5 years, and so much happens in 5 years. And I'm kind of curious whether there's anything about the way you live your not your family life, because Leslie and I have kids and we know how quickly that all changes, but
yeah.
But your life as an artist, like how has it changed in 5 years, whether that means your studio or I know, we'll talk more about, we can certainly talk now too about your gallery, but just your practice of art, has anything sort of changed? And is there anything that you haven't done yet that you're kind of, I don't know if you're a forecaster. I find out so many of these artists that we know have plans. I'm never that.
Yeah.
Boy, if I have a 2-year plan, it's good. But how do you run your life?
So I've never really had much of a plan. I think part of that is that when I started making a living as a painter, it was in 2001 or two. And I couldn't believe that I was able to not get through a year without having to work. And then I sold enough paintings to get through another year. And I just kept thinking, I'm just going to enjoy this luck while this is happening. And somehow it's now like 17 years later and it's still happening. So I don't really go have much of a strategy with that kind of stuff, or I kind of just do the best I can with presenting the work. And artistically, I think the main thing, because my paintings are kind of about where I'm living and what my situation in life is, I think the main thing that's been really fun to play with is the influence that the kids have had on my painting.
For sure.
I'm sitting in my studio now, and I've got a couple of big paintings of the kids that I've been working on for some summer shows that are just really, it's just them, and they're not portraits as much as just paintings of the kids out experiencing the world. And it's really fun kind of being a part of all that and, discovering parts, having little kids. We just go to all these quirky little places that I never would have gone or thought to paint. Like one of the paintings I'm looking at in my studio is a painting of the ice cream shack in Camden. It's all these crazy colors, like bright pink and green. And I never would have thought about painting that. But sitting there in the summer with them eating ice cream, I kept looking at it thinking, man, this would be a wild painting. So I think their influence has been the biggest effect, whether it's them as subjects or just experiencing the world with them and seeing what they're excited by or just kind of following them around on their adventures.
I love that.
Yeah,
because
I
it's almost
see,
like...
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's almost like you're painting through their eyes as well as your own. And I absolutely love that.
Yeah, well, and sometimes I think it is kind of that idea. Like, there's a, you know, Mike, I have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old now, and they're always, like, you know, they're just amazed by things that are so simple and obvious to some of the rest of us. And so, you know, there are little things they'll notice that are really fun to see. Or, you know, and just the way they interact with things. The older one is starting to, like, look at art differently, which is also kind of fun to, like, see art through her eyes. Like, she came in the studio the other day and saw me painting, and she was looking at a painting, I think it was a painting of her, and she said, "Daddy, why are you just painting patches of color instead of painting the thing?" I was like, "Well, I am painting it as patches of color." She's like, "But you're just putting patches of color down." I was like, "Yeah, but doesn't it look like..." And I thought, "Holy..."
Stand back,
she's
and
like,
what do you see?
She's getting it. Like, this is what I talk about in my workshop. Like, see the world as patches of color. And she's seeing it through the painting, at least at this point. I love the way their little brains process the world. It's amazing.
100%. Boy. I don't have it in front of me, but I think, doesn't your Instagram, your bio say something like dad first and then painter? It says like dad
dot painter.
Oh, it might.
Yeah. it may say that. Yeah. I mean,
and you are.
Right there.
Dad first.
Yeah.
Love it.
They're so fun to be around. Also, they try my patience, but they're fun.
We know, Colin, that your girls obviously influence your paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Patches of color and all. Are there artists out there that have influenced you or that you admire that you think we should all check out?
Yeah. I think that's one of the huge benefits of Instagram. I love Instagram for just finding all these new painters that just get suggested or you see someone else share something. But there's
for
a couple... like, I have I'm good friends with Amy Erickson, who's a great painter from up in Portland, Oregon, and her work is really gorgeous. Like, she has such a great understanding of color and design. And then she's turned me on to this guy, Eric Jacobson, who I think is also in Oregon, and I don't know him at all. I just see his paintings all the time on Instagram, and they're just incredibly beautiful gestural color paintings. So they're two of the ones, for like plein air or direct painting. And then there's a couple others that are a little quirkier. There's this one woman, Zoe Frank, who is probably one of my favorite painters right now.
What was the name again?
Zoe Frank, F-R-A-N-K.
Oh, Zoe. Okay.
Yeah. She does, they're quirkier. There's sort of, you know, there's one painting, I think it's the inside of her dishwasher, with like a loaded dishwasher just full up. But it's like this, it's just these beautiful subtle variations of whites throughout the whole thing. It's really stunning.
That's great.
And then Catherine Kehoe is another one.
Oh yeah.
It's these painters who they're both, they're a little quirkier, but they're very much just based, they're observational painters. And it just seems like really careful, interesting observation and an interesting interaction with the world. And then probably the last one that's another, I wanted to mention all my favorites because I don't know Zoe, Catherine, or Eric Jacobson, or John Redmond is another one who I'm not sure where he lives, might be New Hampshire or Pennsylvania, wherever he is. He does gorgeous paintings that are really just like you can see in the painting how carefully he's looking at all these little subtle color shifts,
mm-hmm.
and warm and cool tints. Just really stunning work.
Wow.
Isn't that fun to
awesome.
Discover?
Yeah.
Love it. The only one of those
yeah.
I know of is Catherine Kehoe because she's kind of local around here. And she,
yeah.
I know she teaches out of a studio in Rehoboth, Mass. I think it's Black Pond Studio, if anybody
I
wants
think
to look
right.
her up.
Yeah. Black
yeah.
Pond.
Yeah.
I think her work is really interesting.
Really interesting. I can see why
That's
it appeals
awesome.
To you, too. There's, yeah, so much fun.
Yeah. I like, all right. I think part of the reason I like those three also, I mean, all the, and Eric and Amy, like it's all, it's sort of, it's very, it's observational painting, but it's sort of, it's not like the, it's not always like the typical like postcard scene. It's, they're picking kind of weird subject sometimes, but there's a
like the dishwasher
natural beauty to it. It's just not the, yeah, it's not the obvious thing you choose to paint. Yeah, like the dishwasher. I saw that painting on Instagram and just started drooling. I was like, oh my god, I want to go paint my dishwasher.
That
dishwasher is picturesque, but hers probably wasn't picturesque either. She just is doing this great painting of a thing you see every day.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I'm guessing it was late at night.
Yeah.
Late at night, full dishwasher.
Yeah.
It's kind of like revenge, right? Dishwasher, you don't control me, I can paint you.
Right.
I love it. All right. Well, way back in the beginning, I feel like it's way back in the beginning of time here. You know, I was pretty taken by that little documentary, Painting Provincetown. You know, I thought that, to my mind, that looked like if someone wanted to paint a picture of what a good life as an artist would be, that would have been part of it. You know, getting together with a big group of painters, everybody doing their thing, coming together, you know, the whole routine. But I'm curious, you were in that group in Painting Provincetown, and so I have a couple of questions. One is, do you ever get to do that, like on a regular or occasional basis? And the other one is, can you talk a little bit about what you get out of doing those?
Yeah. So we had that group, it was a group of guys that it's changed, it morphed a little over the years, but we did a trip to Maine, trip to Provincetown, Moab area of Utah, and Mexico. I think those were the only trips we did. And it was, it was great. It was really fun to have, like, you know, some of the, there were always a couple new people that some of the artists knew, and, you know, someone wouldn't make it, we'd fill it in with some new person that only a couple people knew. So you were always meeting a few new people. We haven't done one of those in a long time. It's probably been 7 or 8 years because it was before I had kids. But a couple of us, you know, we had some lifestyle changes where some people were getting married and having children, and it got harder to put it all together. And for some reason, we just haven't managed to do another one of those trips with that group anyway. But it is super rewarding to get together with people. You know, the first trip we did was in Maine, and there were a bunch of people who were from Cape Cod who were getting together to paint, and they invited Logan Hajej, who he's a guy who paints these Western scenes now, but he was from Massachusetts, from the Northeast. And so he said, hey, I've got these friends in LA. If you want to meet them, I could see if they want to join us. And then it was so fun, these different artistic worlds of people we'd never heard of or met all getting together and you know, just getting to talk shop. Even, you know, sometimes it's about painting things or color ideas or technical things. And sometimes it's just what galleries are treating you right and which ones aren't. Where do you get your art supplies? Yeah. Or, you know, very functional, simple, just business stuff. But it's sort of like doing those plein air events where you go to an event and there's 35 artists standing around, and we all, you know, there's not a lot of times when you get to spend so much time with a bunch of peers who are actually doing this professionally for a living.
Right. Gosh, how cool is that? Well, I hope you do another one because, I just think there was a quote in that one where I don't know if it was Logan or someone else said, you know, who knows, like in 50 years, some of these guys might, you know, really make it. Somebody's going to look back and say, oh, they were influenced by their time with so-and-so.
Right.
And I think about that, and I think, gosh, that is so true because artists always learn from each other. You know, and certainly being, right, even being in art school, I mean, maybe you had a professor, but speaking for myself, I learned probably as much from the people that were painting around me. You know, you'd see sort of a new tip or trick or a way of looking at something. And I think to be able to continue that as an adult is phenomenal. So
yeah,
I hope you do it again.
I think that's, it's even with the, like when I do the Laguna plein air event, which is how I got to know Amy Erickson. You know, she's a very smart painter, So Susie Baker, another friend of ours, we'd all be hanging out, and we could just show each other paintings. And like, you know, I don't take classes anymore very often,
sure.
So I don't. It's not like you get that feedback, but like, I could show Susie and Amy a painting and just be like, "So what's wrong with this?" And they'd look at it, and with their professional painting all the time eyes, just was obvious to them. They, you know, we could just troubleshoot each other's problems, and it's so great to get have some of that once in a while.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, Colin, I know over time your paintings have changed, but the subject matter is pretty consistent. You know, things, you do an amazing job painting boats and places, people, of course, your daughters. It's typically something that you're observing. What can you tell about how you go about choosing what you're going to paint? Is it one of those things where you want to paint everything, short of walking into your kitchen and loading the dishwasher and saying, but is it, I'm just curious how you kind of manage that process.
Well, every winter, probably for the last 5 or so years, every winter, I have a bunch of photos from exploring with the kids over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I usually have a couple of those that are just, I have like a plan of a couple big paintings I want to do along those lines. And so it's sort of, I don't know. It's kind of tricky figuring out, like, if I'm outside in the landscape, I'm looking for some kind of a color interaction, which usually has to do with light bouncing off of something or light kind of something that has to do with like a color harmony or light effect that I'm trying to capture. If I'm working in the studio, it's more trying to capture a mood. Like when I paint the kids, it's trying to paint them in the landscape kind of being themselves or having some kind of a, like there's, I have one painting of the two kids in the woods quietly looking around, and another painting with two kids carrying a pirate flag attacking a lighthouse on an island that we went to on my boat this year. Like there's, you know, so it's like very different moods, but it's about trying to capture something like that. And then it's kind of, and then when I do landscapes or other things in the studio, it's sort of like taking the idea of like when I'm outside in the landscape looking for a subject, I'm looking for strong light and color. And then I have these photos and I know, you know, the photo just dulls so much color down. So when I'm looking through the photos, trying to pick something to paint, it's sort of looking for a chance to push color and use my sort of plein air knowledge to make a photo richer and more interesting. I'm trying to, I want to find a way to make the painting kind of find excuses, I guess, to use strong, interesting color relationships in a painting from a photo.
Are you one of those painters who has like 10 different paintings going at the same time? Or are you kind of one that you're working on?
Yeah.
At least?
No, I've got a lot going. Yeah. There are
That's
sort
awesome.
Of different modes. Like if I'm outside in the landscape, when I'm doing plein air paintings, I try to do them and finish them. I might touch up a few notes here and there just to kind of, instead of, you know, not add detail, but just improve a color relationship here or there. But in the winter, I've got a bunch of, I like to start a bunch of big paintings so that they can just be on the wall and I can notice little things here or there and have months to kind of pick away at them. So I might not work on them all every day. Might be a week or two between some touches, but especially with the bigger ones, I really like living with them. So I really need to, you know, have a bunch going so that I'm not just going attacking that one painting.
That's awesome.
It
I love
that. It takes the pressure off. Don't you think
it does take the pressure
off?
Yeah. Because you have time to work
it. If you're not feeling it, that's not the time to like force it. So you can just go to another one that maybe you are feeling sort of more connected to. I totally get that.
Taking the pressure off is a good way of putting it. Like, because it's kind of, sometimes there's a big one that I know it's not good enough, but I don't know why it's not good enough. And I'm tempted to just start putting stuff on there. It's like, if I have other stuff, I have other paintings I'm working on, I can say, okay, just don't touch. Like, when I know what to do to it, I can come back to it. I'll just leave it on the wall in the corner, and I'll look at it once in a while, and eventually I'll figure out a solution.
No, that makes
sometimes
sense.
Go
ahead, Margaret.
Well, I was going to say, sometimes I sort of wish I smoked a pipe or something. Like, I have this image.
Right.
If an artist can
sit back
and contemplate, Like if you could just contemplate your painting from a soft chair and, you know, put, I guess maybe that's where, you know, coffee comes in. But,
You've got it. Is it?
So we're all going to have fights.
So we have to talk about your gallery. And, like, why now? And what's it like being a boss of a gallery? And how do you choose the artists? And is it weird having been on the other side? What's that whole process like?
It's fascinating having been on the other side. I think it's really interesting. So I've been, for a long time, people, you know, because I've been in this area of Maine for about 15 years, and people say, oh, start your own gallery. Have you ever thought about it? And I just kept thinking, no way. I would gladly give up the 50% to just not have to think about any of that. Like, I just want to make my paintings and be left alone and not have to do all the marketing and all that. But then, I don't know, a couple years ago, I just started kind of kicking around the idea in my head of like what it would look like if I did want to do it. And probably the real thing that got me to take it seriously was my wife is always sort of shopping for houses online and in case she'd we talk about moving into downtown Camden, which is our downtown. Our town may have like 5,000 people in it. so it's, you know, it's small, but we're just a couple miles away, but it'd just be fun for the kids because their friends live there. So she found a house that was attached to a barn that used to be a really great gallery in Camden. And we went and looked at it and she's told me she was going to look at a house, and I always tell her, go ahead, look. I'm working. I'm painting. Doesn't matter. But then she mentioned where it was. I thought, well, maybe I'll stop by and look at it. And so while she was there at the showing, I went with her, and seeing the house attached to the gallery, and like, it's not where we ended up, but it got the wheels turning in my head, like really, really turning. I thought, oh man, this could really be fun. Like, I could do this. And so, it's a little crazy, and I'm still not sure. It's definitely a lot of work. There's now the balance of just making sure I have the time to paint while doing all this. But the main thing that made me okay with going forward with it was a friend of mine who used to work at a gallery. She's always been really smart and someone I can kind of bounce ideas off about my career. So I chatted with her about it and this past fall and said, I'm thinking about doing this, expecting her to say, that's a terrible idea. Don't do it. go to your studio and
make
painting.
But she didn't say that,
and instead, she said, I think you could do it. I think it's a good idea. And if you want some help, like, I'm happy to help you out with getting some of it going. I was like, okay, well, what I want you to do is run the whole thing. So if I want some help, if you mean yes, you'll manage it for me, then – so she's basically managing the gallery for me.
And smart.
It's great because we're building it really together. Like, we work really well together. We have similar tastes in art, similar tastes in what the gallery should look like. It's funny. There's so much to do building the vision of what it's going to be. Our lease starts April 1st, so about a week and a half from now. So that's going to be when we can really decide what it's going to, you know, well, that's when we'll start putting art on the walls and moving furniture in and really be able to, like, tangibly see what it's going to look like. But as we've been putting it all together, you know, there were...
Do you have to do a lot to it?
No, not too much. Their walls need to be just patched up a little bit and painted, and we need to put track lighting in. That's the main thing. And then we'll put in some little window display walls. But it's really pretty minimal work. We're hoping within 2 to 3 weeks we'll be able to start moving in. Actually, you know, we'll be done with all the construction and just move in. But it's awesome. You know, there were a lot of decisions along the way, like, is it just the Colin Page Gallery, or is it me and a couple other artists? Do we do group shows? Do we represent people? And so we're trying to keep it, like, in terms of, you guys asked about showing other artists and working with them, having been an artist and showing in galleries, like, if a gallery offers me full-time representation, there are certain expectations I have.
Right.
I didn't want to be responsible for that much. at least right away.
Sure.
Like, this first summer, we're getting our feet under us, trying to figure out how it's all going to play out. So we're keeping a really light commitment. We have a couple artists we're working with who, like, it's been great. We made a list of, like, when we were trying to decide what to do, let's just put some of our top people we'd want to work with down. and we'll make a list and call them and see if anyone's willing. And almost everyone just said yes right off the bat.
Of course.
Holy cow, really? Okay. So, like, once we started getting our favorite artists, we thought, all right, well, let's just – we'll roll with it and see how it goes and try to keep it – we're not doing solo shows for anyone this first year. It's mostly group shows. So we can just kind of experiment with the look and feel of everything as in our first summer.
That's awesome.
So smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
it's been great.
Excited. Yeah, I mean, anybody who's – you get such a great tourist crowd through there every summer. I mean, I would think you'd have a built-in audience. So good for you. Can't wait
to see. Yeah, it's really interesting. This area is interesting because there is – Rockland is the next town over, just 5-10 minute dive down the road. And we have the Farnsworth Museum, which has a lot of Andrew Wyeth paintings and a lot of other just great work there. And there's just a ton of galleries there. There's some galleries in Camden. So there's a lot of – there's just – you know, as I travel around, I keep looking for towns like this elsewhere. It's just a very strong art community and a lot of sales even locally. And then, the tourist factor.
Yeah.
There is a surprising following. I'm optimistic. So
yeah,
we'll
that's awesome. I think you'll be great. So,
yeah.
All right, now that we've covered – the beautiful state of Maine. My question is, of course, what's on your bucket list for other places to paint? Now, I know you do the plein air events, and I was thinking about California, went into Hawaii, I'm sure, other warm, gorgeous places. But you have, like, a list of – what are they? Where would you love to paint?
It's funny. I don't know that I have – there are places I still want to go visit. Like, I'd love to go back to Paris and, you know, go run through the museums there. And there's places I'd like – I don't know that I want to go paint that many – it feels weird to say it. I'm, like, hesitating because I don't want to say it out loud. But one of the reasons I think that I'm excited to do this gallery is that I've been traveling so much to do workshops and plein air events and all these things. And I'm really, like – I'm most excited to keep developing, like, how to make my work more personal and more, like these paintings of the kids or of the kids' craft projects that I do these still lives of. Like, I feel like there's stuff there that's just so rich and meaningful to me that I just want to keep playing with.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go places to visit and have fun. And occasionally, you know, it's fun to do a little sketch here or there, but when I first started doing plein air events, I couldn't wait to go to Hawaii and paint Laguna Beach and all these. And even I went to China this past fall, which was really exciting and interesting. And a trip like that is great once in a while, but I'm more just, I think I just want to be centered a little more at home for a while.
I understand that. Good for you.
But
and now you have
a
reason
event,
to be centered. You had to just open a gallery to have the reason to travel.
Well, that was part of what, like, I think it's one of the reasons I was willing to take the risk with the gallery was that I wouldn't mind being forced to be locked down here a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's funny how that, we need that sometimes.
Yeah.
And as your family gets older, you know, you don't want to leave them. You know, you've only got a few minutes left.
It's true.
I think
they still like me. And when they're 13, they won't care. I can go anywhere then. I may as well hang around while the kids like me.
That's right. You know what? My kids are in their late 20s and they still like us. So there's hope, I promise.
Oh, that's
great. Same here.
Yeah.
Same here.
Yeah.
Although I have one child living in France, one child living in San Francisco, and one moving to Australia on Saturday. So maybe they don't like me as much.
So they like you, but with distance.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
The next question is supposed to be about materials and tips, but I want to expand that a little bit. Part of me just wants to ask you, how did you get so good? I know. And if you could answer that would be great. But I'd also love to know if you have any tips for artists who are trying to get as good as you are. That would be awesome. And don't be shy.
Don't
be shy.
Yeah.
You were going to say, I'm not that good, I can tell, but no, you're amazing.
Well, you know, we all hate our own work in one way or another. I think the thing that I've found most valuable in learning to paint I had a lot of education, formal education, between high school and then Rhode Island School of Design and Cooper Union. There was a lot there, and I got a ton out of that. But
mm-hmm.
one of the reasons when I teach that I like to teach plein air workshops is that I got out of school kind of not sure what I wanted to do and just started painting on location, just kind of on a whim, not even
mm-hmm.
knowing there's this whole plein air world with a magazine and these events.
Right.
And I just loved it. Like, I love being out in nature, responding to nature, trying to, like, capture the beauty of what was in front of me by standing out there and just, moving the brush fast to try to keep
mm-hmm.
up with changing things. So I felt like plein air painting was the thing that helped me find my own voice more than anything else. I think it really, like, if anything, and it doesn't have to be plein air. I really think it's just painting from life. It's
right.
just loosening up and painting what you see. And, you know, sort of, even though it's really nice to learn all the rules of, you know, good design and linear perspective and all these things, at a certain point, I feel like if you're getting into painting from life and you're really just responding to what you're seeing, you're letting go of those rules and just painting the relationships in front
mm-hmm.
of you. So I don't know. That's not very specific for people. I feel like, you know, in terms of what you're asking, I should have something better. The things I work on in class the most are getting people to really, like, basically exactly what Audrey, my kid, said when she came in the studio, to stop seeing the thing and start seeing the shape and the color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like when I'm, you know, if I'm teaching someone how to paint a boat and they're like, "Well, I don't know how to paint the boat. Like, I can't draw a boat." I was like, "Well, what shape is the part sitting on the water? And what shape is that? Like, you just paint those shapes, right? And then what value is that shape? And what color is that? You know, what temperature is it?" And, you know, if you just simplify things, like, you know, it's basically like pixelating. You just have to stop getting wrapped up in the information and what you think is happening and just, you know, have a visual interest in the scene. It's, you know, if you're painting your visual interest in it, then it can get so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So true.
Makes me feel like going and painting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Now, Leslie, you sort of jumped from materials, which is fine, but I still have a sort of curiosity. Did you, in fact, move to a new studio? Did your wife prevail? And
we have not.
Whether
no,
you're in your
we're,
old
thank
studio.
God.
Okay.
At some point,
enough, right?
We may do it, and I'll have to be okay with it. It just seems like so much work, especially with all the crap that kids accumulate. Oh my God, so much stuff.
Well, let's
just
think
wait.
Of it this way. You've only got a few more minutes till one of those girls gets a driver's license. How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
That'll make you move down.
Yeah,
so,
no kidding.
Can you describe, we know you've got 10 or more paintings going, it sounds like, and I know, I should tell you from personal experience, I have an art group that I meet with monthly. I walked into someone's house last year, walked into her kitchen and pointed to the wall and said, "Oh, that's a Colin Page." And she's got one of your great big striped tablecloths.
Oh,
amazing.
Wow.
That's great.
Silhouette painting. Yeah. It
that's so fun.
Couldn't be on a better wall, let me tell you. But I'm imagining when you say large, you're talking about really large, because that painting's got to be at least, I don't know, one of its dimensions
has
to be 48 inches.
I think that's probably
4
by 3 feet. Yeah. A lot of the still lives are 48 by 36 inches. So the ones in the studio now, I've got 2 4 by 4 foot paintings, and a couple of 3 by 4 foot paintings, and then some 24, 36 to 30 by 40 inch. the studio right now, this time of year, the studio, it starts getting hard to walk through because, we don't have a whole lot going on in the winter. So it tends to be that the galleries won't work in the spring. So I got a little bit of work. Basically, paintings just piled up against the wall and frames piling up. Then at some point, I'm going to have to buckle down for a couple of weeks and go through and varnish the paintings, put the paintings in the frames, do the hanging wire and all that stuff. So this time of year, it's kind of, the studio's getting away from me a little bit. And I'm also starting to pile, I've got, it's actually really nice. I've got, one of the artists we're going to show is Peggy Kroll Roberts. So we just got some of her paintings back from the framer. She shipped out some gouache still life paintings that are just so beautiful. And she shipped them out on paper, so we got them framed. And then, you know, we don't have our space yet, so I've just got Peggy's paintings over here in a corner, and I've got some gallery furniture. It's really, like, it's ridiculous in here.
Well, April 1st is coming. You'll be able to move all that out.
I know.
I love it. Do you keep, like, a comfortable chair, you know, the pipe-smoking chair? Do you have a chair? Or
yeah, I have my pipe-smoking chair, but it's I don't smoke pipes in it. Yes, but I have
of course
a very comfy. Yeah, I've got two big chairs. We've got a leather chair that our cats destroyed that at some point when I'm rich and famous, we might reupholster. But that's basically hiding in here, but it's very comfortable. I've got two kind of beat up old comfy chairs in here, which is really nice, as long as I don't put stuff in them so I can still sit in them.
Yeah, well, I usually have a lab in mind, so I get it. But that's great.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear your studio is still at near your home. Good.
Mm-hmm.
So true.
All right. I'm just gonna move on to the color question, because this is one. I hope everyone will bear with me. This is really just born out of my own curiosity. Kind of, you know, you hear a lot of different things about painters who have a really rich, vibrant palette, and I think I'm putting you in that category, obviously. You know, once a colorist, always a colorist. Do you think that's true, or? You know, are you ever tempted to kind of totally change it up, or have you ever done just like, you know, tonal paintings, just leave the color out? Like, I can't imagine you doing anything that drab, but I'm curious.
Right.
Because you do the color, are you ever tempted?
So when on the trip to China, there was a lot of gray cement. Yeah, it was really, the colors were much more muted there. It was also, the light was muted. It was really like, you know, mostly concrete buildings. They weren't painted. They were just natural concrete, and the water was kind of gray. Everything was a little more neutral most of the time. And it was really challenging, but I was trying to, in that situation, I was trying to still put as much color as I could into that muted landscape. So I think the paintings are grayer than most of mine, but I'm still aiming for color. The one thing I've been trying to play around with a little since that trip, actually, was trying to figure out if I could apply that kind of like slightly more muted palette. It's still, I haven't wanted to do anything that's totally tonalist where it's really kind of, you know, quieter, murkier, darker kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I still like to have some color variation, but I've got one painting of my daughter on an overcast day swimming through these lily pads, and that one, that's one of my big ones. And because it's an overcast day and I'm looking down, it's sort of looking down on her, so the water's not bright blue. There's a lot of murky colors, but I'm trying to find this still kind of a lavender to greenish kind of tint. And then I've got another one of the kids in dappled light in the woods exploring, and because of the nature of the dappled light and all the, you know, dead leaves and dirt and tree branches, instead of popping all those colors, I've been trying to dial it down and keep it more in like a brown to lavender to green kind of color scheme, where nothing's actually that saturated. And it's kind of, it's interesting. I'm really enjoying those paintings, and I feel it's, in some ways they don't feel like mine, you know,
because I feel like
my paintings, everything has to be totally exaggerated color temperature, but there's a peacefulness to them that I'm really enjoying.
But Colin, that's why you're so good, because you have these gorgeous paintings with this amazing color, and then you go to China and it's like, oh my God, they're unbelievable. And I know when I was going through your Instagram and I saw those, I was like, whoa, what happened here? And I was like, oh my God, these are unbelievable. And I have to ask, when you were painting, was it intentional that it just happened? Was it like, and then did you like look at the first one and go, wow, I am good?
You mean intentional that they were muted like that? Or
Yeah, I mean, it's different for you, but man, you knocked it out of the park. Unbelievable.
Well, thanks. That's really nice to hear. The subject matter really was, I was actually, there's an artist, another one's from Oregon, Eric Bowman, and I emailed him some questions about the trip because he'd been there before. And he said, oh, it's great. You got to try it. I don't know what you're going to paint there, though, because everything is gray.
Uh-huh.
<It's> like,
you're like, oh.
And so I kind of, I knew going in, I thought, okay, I'm going to have to figure this out. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do with all that.
Really?
But it was really just responding to, like, those really neutral colors and trying to figure out. Like, I'm always, what I'm looking for when I paint, even my really saturated paintings, is little color temperature shifts in everything. If
mm-hmm.
one patch of a shadow has a warm here and a cool an inch over the side, I'm trying to just find those color temperature shifts and make the most of them, whether it's crazy orange, teals, and pinks or soft grays. So when I was there, I was looking like in the gray water, if it was brownish in one area and cooler in another, or these boats had a little shift, I was trying to get keep the muted feel, but still have some of that warm, cool shift happening within it. And
mm-hmm.
it's funny because
yeah.
those paintings, as gray as they were, like there were some very good painters. David Dibble, who does beautiful paintings out in Utah, he was on the trip and did some gorgeous work. But the guy, we hung all our work and they looked over at mine like, wow, those are so much more colorful. Like a couple people said that.
And,
you know, and
you're thinking,
they were colorful
no.
for where we were. But, like, you know, we were all just trying to get as much color as we could out of a gray area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so
amazing. Amazing.
Well, thank
so
you. That's really nice.
I know
you
teach workshops, and you're a very popular
mm-hmm.
guy. They sell out very fast. So apparently you have a pretty cool and random way of dealing with students. Can you explain your lottery system?
Yes. So this was not my idea. I've taught for years with this woman in Rockland who has Coastal Maine Art Workshops. And she has all these great instructors come through, but most of them don't live around here. So people are coming in. I think Mark Hansen's taught there, Lori Putnam, and Blair Brown. Like, great painters are coming through teaching there. But since I'm local, I've got a little more of a following. And so after a couple years of teaching with her, we got to the point where there were so many people trying to sign up that I'd be teaching a class and the people in the class would say, we want to sign up for next year's class now. And people would get mad because they'd call when she announced the class and she'd say, well, I'm already sold out. And so she was just sick of getting yelled at. So she came up with the idea to keep people from getting mad at her for having my class sold out, where we would have a window of a couple weeks where, you know, maybe an enrollment would be open for 2 weeks where people could send an email, call in, whatever it was, and give us their name and email. And then we would do a lottery system where we put, I think the first year it was over 70 people tried to get into a class with 12 slots in it, which was great.
Holy
so,
God.
Yeah. Yeah, but it
sounds
was also
like college
kind of
admission.
Crazy. Yeah, I know. So we just wanted to find a totally neutral, even way of handling that. So we actually had my daughter pick the names out of the hat the first year. And so she picked out who got to be in the class. And we picked all 12, and then I think we picked another 12 for a waiting list and then let everyone know where they were. And so when I'm opening this new gallery, I'm going to start teaching now through the gallery. And we had to do it this year for the first time. And it's really crazy. I feel like I'm totally thrilled. I'm happy that people want to take my class. I can't figure out what is different. Like, you know, like I feel like, you know, I'm just doing
than
the best
any other
I can
class.
Teaching, and I'm thrilled. People are so excited to be here. So I'll just take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
God.
We also the coming workshop. I wanted to make it a little. This year, like, it always seems like there's a lot you're trying to squeeze into a plein air class. Like, there's, like, you know, you have people for anywhere from 3 to 5 days and you're throwing all this information at them. So we broke the class down for this coming year. So instead of just having one class of 12 slots, we have 3 classes. And each one, there's a design week, a brushwork week, and a color week so that we can also kind of, I can focus it a little more. So it's kind of fun getting
That's
to
brilliant.
Build the class my own way. Yeah.
Awesome.
Another one of the perks of being your own boss. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I know we're using a lot of your work time, so I'm going to go quickly now, and I'm just going to say,
okay.
People ask all the time about painting from photos, and
mm-hmm.
everyone has a different opinion. Some people think, oh, it's the worst thing you can do. You know, the paint, nothing can replace, you know, your eye. But I know you've talked about it. So what are your thoughts? What are the pros and cons of painting from a photograph?
I think you learn different things from the different ways of painting. I definitely think, like, the paintings I tend to be drawn to generally are painted from life most of the time. I feel like you can see so much more with the naked eye than you can with a photo. I also think there's a problem solving that you do when working from life, where you're taking a three-dimensional world and trying to flatten it onto this two-dimensional
mm-hmm.
plane, whether it's a canvas or a drawing. That's like that way of thinking is, you end up coming up with interesting solutions to those problems. Whereas when you're painting from a photo, you're just copying the shapes. And it's just simpler and solves. I don't know. It's like the camera is doing half of the work I feel like your brain can be doing. But
true.
Then I do. Yeah. So like for learning, I think painting from life is generally a lot better. But for painting
mm-hmm.
from photos in the studio, since I do a lot of it in the winter, I've found that like when I paint the kids from photos, usually there are multiple photos. Like even if it's just one kid in the landscape, the kid will make a great pose in one place, but they could be standing somewhere else and it would tie together a lot better. So I usually with the paintings from photos, I'm using multiple photo resources. So it's not just a direct copy of one photo. I'm trying to
gotcha.
take multiple photos and kind of use imagination. And I think there's a problem solving that's kind of interesting there, where you're a little more like creatively building the scene instead of responding to just what's in front of you. And that's it's a different
uh-huh.
mindset that I don't think is, neither one, I'm not a purist about either one. I think it's totally great to work from photos if you can make it work. My big caveat with that is if you're learning, like if you're really in early stages, you should, even if you want to paint from photos most of the time, I think it's really worth the time of setting up even just still lives, anything where you're painting from what your eye is taking in for the color
yeah.
information. Because like when I go to my paintings from photos, I'm using a lot of plein air knowledge to try to add interest and color relationships.
That's awesome.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I should have looked up how you answered these questions 5 years ago.
I bet they're totally different. I'm just making it all up
exactly,
as I go.
They are exactly the same, but I have a feeling the answers
yeah.
might be different.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Well, yeah.
So we're
I hope
ask,
it's different. Just
okay. So we're going to ask these, and the first question is, what is your favorite art book?
This pretty much since college, it's always been the Bay Area Figurative Art Exhibition
okay.
catalog. It's gorgeous. It's got like Deben Korn and Elmer Bischoff and these great painters,
Margaret,
David Park.
Margaret's ordering it right now. I can promise you that.
It's so good.
No,
I love that book. Yeah. It's
all
worth it, Margaret. Go for it. Pull up
there
Amazon.
You go. All right, I will. All right, here we are. What is your favorite tube of paint? What color can't you live without?
Probably, it's tough. Quinacridone red I love quinacridone for how bright and magenta and punchy it gets. But I've
yep.
also, Deborah Hughes encouraged me to start playing with Gamblin's radiant colors and radiant turquoise. It's so unnecessary, but like, cause you can make, it's basically just like a phthalo with some white added to it, but it's so fun having these really radiant, crazy colors. So it might be one of those two. Or
yeah.
I started playing with King's Blue, which is kind of a nice one too.
Oh.
So there's
yeah,
three.
Because
kind of I can't
okay.
commit. Yeah.
Okay. So, do you have a favorite musician or album, Pandora Station kind of music that you listen to while you're painting, or do you paint in silence?
There's pretty much always podcasts or NPR. I like to
mm-hmm.
or a book on tape. I like to have talking. I feel like I get distracted wrapped up in my own head if I don't have something like that going on.
Is there a podcast you listen to every day?
There's nothing that comes out. If I'm painting like 6 to 8 hours a day, it's a lot of podcasts. Oh, I burn through a whole pile.
A lot.
But there are some really great ones. There's some sort of like This American Life and Radio Lab. There's some good ones,
sure,
like that. Monday mornings, I listen to like Meet the Press, and there's some KCRW, like some politics ones are fun. There's sort of a wide range, a very wide range.
Very cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Whose art do you wish you could add to your collection?
I think right now it would be that artist Zoe Frank, who I mentioned earlier.
Awesome. Kudos to Zoe. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. I've just seen them online up to this point, but I think they're really impressive.
Wow.
That's great. Okay.
That's wonderful. Can you share a great studio tip for our listeners?
I should have thought about, I don't know. I don't know if I have a great
tip. I'll jump in with a
tip.
Do you clean your palette and your brushes at the end of every painting session?
I don't. No. I scrape my palette off the mixing area and wipe it on an old rag, and I wash the brushes in turpentine and put them on the table, and then the next day I just pick them up again, and they're still good to go. But
did
I
you
do,
just say
but
turpentine?
Yeah.
Well, it's
did
Gamsol.
You?
Whatever.
Okay.
It's Gamsol.
Okay.
And I have
just
a ventilation system in here. I'm very careful about that stuff.
No, Gamsol's fine. You can
drink
Gamsol, I think, we were told. But don't.
Listen. I'm going to, again, share too much
Leslie
and tell you
that
I'm
okay.
The person. I miss the smell of turpentine. I will probably say
yeah.
that on my deathbed.
Oh, exactly.
I miss
but,
it.
I mean, yeah.
I went on a studio
dangerous.
Visit to one of the people we're going to show at the gallery, and he had like real terps in there. It clearly smelled like he'd been painting with them, and it smelled so good in there. So
but
good.
But did you tell him not
to?
Did you tell him? Did you save his
no,
life and tell him not to use them?
No. we talked a little bit about the difference. He's used both. And it wasn't like he actively had the can open. It was just like the
right.
paint drying with the real turpentine smell.
Oh,
it was that
I
sort
know.
Of like
got it. No,
it
does smell amazing.
Smell. Oh my god.
It was the
taste. Yeah, that and
smell,
rabbit
yeah.
skin blue on oil prime linen. Like
oh
a good rabbit oil prime linen with rabbit skin glue on it is yeah, that smell too. Makes me very happy.
Yeah.
Maybe for you.
So, Colin, what's on your easel right now? Or I guess I should probably ask easels, but maybe you could talk about your favorite
yeah.
one, because I know there's 10.
My favorite one is two. It's the two biggest ones, because I feel like they're the most ambitious, and they actually seem to be coming out. And one is Audrey, my older child, swimming in the lily pads.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I've posted it on my Instagram, but I think I have posted it on Page Gallery or at Page Gallery. I should know my own Instagram feed for the gallery, but
probably
I don't.
That would be good.
Off the top of my head. but it's I think I posted it on the Page Gallery Instagram feed, and I need to put it on my own. And then the other one is the Kids in the Woods, which is the same size, and it was sort of inspired by there's a John Singer Sargent painting, The Hermit. That's at the Met in New York, and it's this hermit in the woods, and it's all dappled light, and after you've been looking at it for like 2 minutes, you realize there's two deer standing in the foreground of the painting that you haven't even noticed are there because they're all sort of camouflagey, and mine's not that dappled and camouflagey, but it made me think that this photo I'd wanted to paint from, but I kept thinking, God, I could never paint light like that. There's just too much pops of dark and light, and I looked at the hermit painting and thought, okay, if I can steal enough from Sargent, I might be able to pull this thing off. So, stealing liberally.
I have to interrupt you and say that painting is unbelievable. I found
it's
it
amazing.
On the gallery. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that. I thought you meant the hermit.
No, I'm talking about your painting.
Sargent.
The lily pad painting.
Oh, well, thank you.
I was still like, wow, he thinks it's amazing, too. I love that.
No, I am very happy with it. Yes, but thank you. That I didn't mean to sound like I was so amazed by
that. That is so funny. I know you're so embarrassed.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh,
well,
I love
you.
It.
It's been fun trying to figure out all those soft grayish blues and all that. yeah.
It is stunning. Okay, Margaret, you're up, right? Or no? I can't.
Well,
I'm not even sure.
I think we're all confused today, so I'm just gonna go to the next one. Who would you most like to spend some time? We say study with. I kind of like, who would you like to paint alongside? And this can be any artist that are alive.
I
guess somebody can help you out with that.
For someone. So, like, for the idea of studying, it would probably be Catherine Kehoe, because I'm just really interested in how she works from observation.
Yeah.
And then if it was just any artist over time, that's an insane question. That's, like, impossible to answer.
It is impossible.
Part of me wants to say Monet, because I always think, like, oh, you know, like, the Impressionist, you know, sort of like the obvious answer. And I think, oh, Monet, yeah, he's good. And then I go to a museum and see one of his paintings and think, holy shit. Like, that's insanely, like, they always, even though I know he's good, I go in thinking, yeah. And I look at him like, no, that's really special.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, there it is.
Yeah, like Monet, Sorolla. I feel like Rembrandt's got to be.
I thought
the last time I was in Paris. I went to the Musée d'Orsay 3 times. I was only there 3 days.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
That place, yeah. That museum is heaven on earth. It's amazing.
It is. It's crazy.
Okay, field trip.
Last, yeah. Oh, that, I would be up for that. Okay, last question. Describe a typical day in your studio.
So, generally, I get in here around the kids get on the bus around 8:30, and I just come down and just come in the studio, and lately it's been because I'm spending so much time working on the gallery, I might do either gallery, like some emails or phone calls or whatever for them for the first hour or two, and then I try to settle in. I've always found that I paint best in the afternoon and evening, but I have to work around the family schedule, so usually by the time I get to lunch, I've been playing around. Like, I might start with touching up old paintings, or, you know, trying a color here and there in some of the bigger paintings. Then by the after lunchtime, I've got till about 4:30 to paint, and I try to just dig into something, like whether it's starting a new big one or doing a bunch of sketches to plan out some possible ideas. I feel like the afternoon's when I can really be productive. And then actually usually after the kids are in bed, lately because of the gallery and feeling busier, once the kids are in bed at 7:30, I come back out here and sometimes paint for another 2 hours before bed so I can get a little extra time in.
Yeah, that's a nice schedule.
Yeah. And it's actually, it's the gallery has cut into what used to be all day painting. You know, sometimes I end up working on gallery stuff or just my own business things, you know, my own website, not just the gallery things, or emailing other people or showing my work. And, you know, that can take till noon some days. So then I get in the studio and I've got 4 hours and I feel like, okay, I got to really make the most of the day. And it sort of focuses me. It's, you know, when there's a luxury to having all this time to go to spend, you know, if I have 8-9 hours in the studio, I end up doing some sloppy stuff once in a while and just messing around.
Mm-hmm.
But now I don't have that.
Oh,
I can't
sure.
do that anymore. So now I come in here and I just buckle down. I make sure I've got a plan. I go in, I paint smarter. And so it's been actually kind of nice.
It's awesome.
Being forced to focus.
Very
yeah.
cool. Yeah. Well, I have a feeling you're going to be seeing a lot of other artists' workspaces, and you'll be – you'll be
yeah,
sort of like a whole
too.
New yeah you'll be a whole new man at the end of this experience. But
yeah.
for anybody who's interested, your gallery, you say your lease starts April 1st, so you'll be up for
yes.
Our main summer season.
Oh yeah, our first big reception is May 9th, is Thursday May 9th, from 5 to 7 p.m. in Camden, and the gallery is the website is thepagegallery.com.
There you go.
And the Instagram, I'm pretty sure, is at Page Gallery.
It is.
And thank you for checking that, Leslie. Very nice of you. And our address is 23 Bayview Street. If you're in Camden, it's basically, you know, it's the town, the whole town's about 3 or 4 blocks. So we're on one of those blocks.
Oh, that's great. Well, gosh, we wish you well with this. It's so exciting. And I have a feeling when we talk to you in a few years' time, you're going to be able to tell us a lot about the
It's not going to be a few years, Margaret.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well,
it'll be sooner if you'll have us back.
Yeah, well, I'd love to talk to you guys anytime, and I really appreciate you guys speaking with me for so long. It's really fun catching up again.
Thank you.
It's
you're amazing.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And, Colin, we wish you all the best. We'll be visiting.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, all.
Bye.
Bye.